Okay, so this is a joint work with Joel Kanitzer and Ged Kluberg. And basically, what we'll be looking at initially is these things called webs, which Ged Kluberg came up with in the mid to early 90s. And what they were was they basically gave a combinatorial description of, let's say, some invariant vectors in a tensor product of irreducible representations for a group. And it was a totally combinatorial object. It was fairly nice. But what we'd like to do in the long run now is to give a geometric interpretation of this combinatorial object. And so this was basically recently published. I guess it's on archive now. So let me just say this is joint, as I said before, with Ged Kluberg and Joel Kanitzer. So the first thing we need to find out is what's a web. Okay, so I'll basically be defining all the objects that I'll be using. Well, at least we need to say, before you even define a web, we need to figure out what is the thing, what group will we be looking at, what representations we're looking at. So we're going to say here, let G be a simply connected complex algebraic group. And then what we're going to do is, well, we'll need dominant weights, of course, because we're dealing with a representation. So this is the dominant weights. And then, of course, we'll say that V lambda is the irreducible of weight lambda, of highest weight lambda. So, as a shorthand, one more notation. As a shorthand, if lambda is a sequence, which I'll denote as the variable with an arrow on top, with, let's say, lambda I dominant, then whenever we write V sub lambda as a sequence, we really mean just, well, the tensor product of the appropriate irreducible spaces or representations. So now we're in a position, so what are the web? The answer is, well, fairly easy. They're not too hard to describe. And the idea is that, well, a web is a graph, let's say, generated by, well, this following vertex. We'll take a vertex, let's say it's going to be oriented, labeled lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, where basically the lambda I are, well, dominant weights, and they're minuscule. And what we're going to require one more thing, because this would be turn out to be too many vertices. We're going to require the dimension of the invariant space corresponding to the tensor product is 1. Now, this can either be basically 1 or 0 because of the fact that the lambda I are minuscule. So this limits the dimension to 1 or 0, and we're only going to take these vertices where the dimension is 1. So essentially what we'll be thinking of is that these vertices in the graph correspond to one of these invariants. Now, of course, we say, okay, generated by these vertices. We can't really glue these vertices together along edges that are all oriented in the wrong direction. So we need to fix this first. We need to say, well, we allow, let's say, the orientation of an edge. It's too low, or that's Thank you very much. Okay. So basically, we'll allow the orientation of net to change by taking the dual of the weight. So we'll say that an edge like this between two vertices with weight lambda should be equal to the edge in the opposite orientation with weight, well, lambda dual, so the weight of the corresponding dual of the irreducible representation corresponds to lambda. So if you're doing this, then we're allowed to change the orientation here, and we can glue this together. So as an example then, what do these webs look like? Well, in the case, for instance, G equals SL4, here we have, well, it turns out we have three minuscule weights corresponding to the three fundamental weights. Three fundamental weights are also minuscule. So for instance, what we're going to typically do is we'll typically draw the graph in, well, one of two ways. We'll either draw it in a disk or, well, on a line. So we'll draw it in a disk with a marked point. So this is sort of part of the structure of the graph is this disk with the marked point. So we need to choose this to break some sort of symmetry. And so what I'll do is I'll give the edges some orientation. And if I do this right, hopefully, I'll call this guy, let's say, omega 3, so the third fundamental weight of SL4, and this guy, let's say, omega 1, omega 3, and omega 1. And then what's going to happen is that I'll call this guy omega 1, this guy omega 2, let's say this guy omega 1, this guy omega 2. And if you were to check, these vertices will all have the property that the holospace of this would give us, would be dimension 1. Alternatively, we'll sometimes draw them along a line by setting the point here, this marked point, to be the point at infinity. So this is often a useful sort of way of drawing them, but let's see what we get. We come out here, we get this, and then we have something that looks like this, and then here, and then we can copy the labels over from here. You know, this guy is W omega 3, omega 1, omega 3, omega 1, so on and so forth. So these are two different webs, the same web, just drawn in two different ways. And both ways will be useful for drawing these objects. Now, so what we'd like to do is, from these webs, we'd like to produce some sort of, as I said in the beginning, these webs correspond to some sort of invariant vectors and some sort of representation. So how do we get that? Well, the first thing we have to do is to find out, well, first of all, where will this invariant vector lie? And so we're going to say, well, the boundary of the web, well, what will it be? It will be, is the sequence, I think it's probably a sequence, right? Of weights corresponding to the exterior edges. So in this case, so in the example here, the boundary of this guy, so we're going to read it from the marked point going clockwise around. So what will the boundary of this guy be? The boundary of this guy will be, let's say, lambda, the sequence lambda will be omega 3, omega 1, omega 3, and omega 1. As a remark, you may think that, well, because we have this notion here, and we can change the orientation and dualize, this isn't really well defined. So what we need to do is, for once and for all, pick a choice that we're going to only call this the boundary if all the edges, let's say, are oriented inwards from the boundary of the disk. So we making that choice then does fix this boundary these boundary weights. Okay. So how do we then get the vector corresponding to this web, or what we would call the web vector? Well, essentially, as I said, we think of these vertices as elements in this sort of space of invariant in this tensor product. So what we can do is web essentially gives us a recipe of how we can compose those tensors together to get essentially a tensor that will be in the boundary, in the boundary of the web. So should I already say we get some vector psi w where let's say where w is the web, which is basically let's say composing along the edges. So whenever we see two vertices adjacent, we can think of making a sort of composing the tensor along that edge. Okay. So where will this lie? This vector will lie in the tensor product v lambda, where lambda is the boundary of the web. Let's say w. So this is fairly nice. But the question is now we get these invariant vectors. What do we know about this psi function? So Greg worked on this a bit and he came up with a few answers. So it turns out that psi is surjective. That is, if we think of psi now as a, if we extend linearly to a linear combination of these webs, then we will get, of course, some other vectors, just by taking linear combinations of the images of these web vectors, then it turns out that psi is surjective when G is, SLN. So this is pretty nice. It means that these web vectors, these webs, essentially at least span the space of these invariants. So we're getting somewhere. And then the other question is, what's the kernel of psi? Like what webs, essentially, what linear combination of webs map to zero? And, if we know this kernel, can we find out a basis for a basis set of webs whose image in the invariant space is a basis? And so the answer in the case, let's say, G is equal to SL2 has been sort of known fairly classically. So in this case, the minuscule weights are, there's just one of them, because there's one fundamental weight. It turns out for SLN in general, the minuscule and fundamental weights are the exact same set of weights. So it turns out here we have one minuscule. What is it? It's omega 1. And, omega 1 is equal to omega 1 dual, right? So if we change the orientation on an edge, we don't change the label. And since every edge will be labeled omega 1, then we might as well drop both the orientation and the labeling on all the edges, because they don't matter in this case, G equals SL2. Okay, so then an example for this web would be, for instance, you might have drawn along a line. So you might have something drawn like this, where now in SL2 case, there'll be no vertices, because if you look at this formula here, the dimension of the Hom space when these lambdas are all omega 1 in SL2 is going to be 0, because there's no vectors in this, there's no invariant tensors in that tensor product. So what we see then is that there's no vertices, and we just have things which look like this, plus maybe we have to allow things like closed loops to appear as well. And so such a graph, aside from the closed loops, this is some sort of what one might call a crossless matching or a planar matching. And these are all the webs. And it turns out that the kernel of psi in this case is, I just want to make sure I don't make a mistake here, okay, very good, is generated by the relation that, this closed loop is really just, we can think of it as multiplying by 2. So this guy here, we can erase the closed loop at the expense of adding a 2 in front of this guy. So this tells us that essentially we can remove all closed loops from the web, and then a basis is just a set of, matchings like this. So that's pretty nice. That gives us a very explicit definition of at least in SL2 what this web-based facilities, webs, look like. They're the ones we care about are the ones with no loops, and they just look like this. So, in the case, this is an older case. This is well known for quite a while. And then what Greg did is Greg developed the case G equals SL3. In this case, well, we have two fundamental weights, omega 1 and omega 2. And it turns out that omega 1 dual is equal to omega 2. So this means that what we can do is in this web, we can orient every edge so that they're all labeled by omega 1. If an edge was labeled by omega 2 in a web, you just change the orientation of it, it's now labeled by omega 1. And so we can then, yes. We'll give you every circle will be like the kernel is generated by this. You take every graph outside here and then it's basically like multiplying by 2 each time you have a circle. So you think of the kernel will be all those things which contain circles. And then the other side will be, will be things where a graph is a circle and then minus the same graph with a 2 in front of it. So we're taking essentially this psi is working out on formal linear combinations of webs. Okay. So in the case here, then the labeling doesn't matter. So what we'll have is we can remove the labeling altogether because we can just make everything labeled omega 1. But then the directions are still there. So the webs are generated by, what vertices? Well, what vertices remain are just the guy who's pointed inwards and, the guy who's pointed outwards. Of course, these both have labelings. Remember, think we're thinking now that these are all essentially labeled with the omega 1 weight. So then, for instance, these graphs, the SL3 webs are generated by these guys. So for example, one might say that when we can just see a SL3 web might be to, for instance, take a hexagon shape here like this, and I'll just add some orientations onto it so that every vertex is a sink or a source. And we just draw it like this, so we go that way. And then, this is an example then of, let's say, an SL3 web. Here, we only allow vertices that are either sinks or sources. And of course, we also allow things like, the loops as well. Now, to determine what a basis is, we need to, once again, Greg did his calculations back in the early 90s. And what he found out was that, the kernel of psi is generated by, by what? By essentially these closed loops. But in the SL3 case, the closed loops should now be equal to 3 for various reasons. And what's going to happen is that we also have two other sort of generating relations in our set. It'll turn out that, if we have something which looks like this, then it should be negative 2 times line. And I'm not writing orientations on here because the orientations don't really matter. We can orient these in either direction and we still get the same relation. But we should say here at least, we'll say, why don't I just put this on just to, I'll put the orientations on so that basically a face in the graph of degree 2 we can always remove at the cost of multiplying by minus 2. And the last relation is, anytime we have a face of degree 4, so remember these are oriented, so this face here will look like this, this should be equal to, something which is sort of reminds us a bit of some sort of knot theory, maybe, that you take the 4 face and we can replace it with, the same diagram but containing this, or plus the one containing this, and I have managed to mess up the orientations on this side. Very good. So these describe the kernel, and so what do we say here? We can eliminate any sort of, zero face or one face, I don't know what you call this, at cost of multiplying by 3, any two face at cost of multiplying by minus 2, and any four face can be eliminated by, it's just gone. Right? It's not there anymore. Okay, so, and we should know that because these other sources are sinks, of course, but we are graphed by apartheid, so there's no faces of degree 3. There's no odd degree faces in this graph that can be. Right? So this means that a basis set, because we can eliminate all faces of size, let's say 0, 2, and 4, is going to be, well, the graphs where you just have no faces of degree 0, 2, or 4. So only faces of degree 6 or higher, like this. So this guy, for instance, would be a basis web for the SL4 case, the SL3 case, sorry. So this is really nice. This was worked on quite a while ago. They made some calculations in the mid-90s, and they found out that indeed, comparing this to, for instance, the dual canonical basis, this basis was had some early agreement with the dual canonical basis, but was not the same. What we'd like to do is give a sort of geometric interpretation of what these webs are. So we need to introduce some geometry. So this might be, because some people will know all about this and some people won't, so I'll start from the sort of basics. So we're going to define the affine Grassmannian. This will be the thing that plays a role of our sort of thing that geometrifies this picture, because, well, we have this nice thing called the geometric spiking correspondence, which is representations to some next geometry on the affine Grassmannian. So what we're going to do here is we're going to let, as usual in this case, we're going to let some K be the set of Laurent polynomials. We're going to let O be the set of, well, Taylor polynomials. And we're going to, and of course, we're also going to set here, well, we're going to say G check is the Langmuir's dual. Of G. So, what is the affine Grassmannian? Then we define the affine Grassmannian. Okay, and we'll do a short form as the letters GR. So I'll often call it GR because, well, I picked it up from Joel. So the affine Grassmannian GR, what should this be equal to? It should be equal to G check of K mod G check of O. Now, it turns out that there's a very nice action on the left by G check of O whose orbits stratify the affine Grassmannian. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, well, G check of O, let's say, acts on the left on GR. And the orbits, well, they stratify, the orbits stratify the space. And it's stratified in a very nice fashion. I mean, it turns out that the orbits are what will they be? They'll be G check of O times something, and that something will be, well, we'll call it T lambda, where here lambda is a dominant weight of G, or essentially a dominant coweight of G check. So you can think of a dominant coweight of G check, right, as a function from the C to the maximal abelian subgroup. So you can think of this as lying in the affine Grassmannian, so it generates this orbit. So we'll call this guy GR lambda. Okay. It turns out that for each lambda we'll get a different orbit, for each dominant weight we'll get a different orbit. And these orbits stratify the space, they're very nice. So these play basically an important role in proving this geodesic spiking correspondence. But essentially, we want to do one more thing, in that we want to define one more object. So given a sequence, so I can say, given lambda, sequence lambda, lambda I, so dominant, so sequence of dominant weights, and we're also going to assume, of course, that these guys are, just in general like this, okay. So these lambda I are dominant weights. What we're going to do is we're going to define something called the twisted product of orbits. So we'll define this guy, just so we don't confuse it with the GR sub lambda. We'll call this GR lambda in brackets. And what will this be? Well, what we're going to be doing is we're going to essentially be taking, well, exactly what it sounds like. We'll be taking these orbits with corresponding to the lambda I, and we're taking some sort of funny twisted products. So what is it? Well, if these points L0 through LN in the n plus 1 copies of the affine Grassmannian, satisfying all certain conditions, will require that L0 is equal to this guy T0, or T0, where T0 is the, well, the zero weight. And then we're going to require that, well, we need to define some sort of distance. So we're going to require that there's going to be a distance between L0 and, or LI and LI plus 1 will be equal to, and I'll define this distance in a second, is equal to, well, lambda I. So it turns out that this will be something which we'll call this twisted product. And the question is now, how do I define this distance? So we need some sort of, I don't know, vector value distance. Yes? On the right. So the quotient by G is on the right, and that's on the left. Yes, exactly, yeah. I mean, this is just n plus the Cartesian product of n plus 1 copies of Gur, yeah. So it's nothing terribly special. So you're saying a sequence of elements of length n in the affine Grassmannian. So the question is now, how do you define this distance? Well, this is not too bad. Let's say there exists a G in G check of K with the property that G of L, let's say, I is equal to this guy T naught. And so let me move over to the other board since this is hard to see. So what are we saying here? We're basically saying that we'll take a representative of Li, any representative from its coset, and multiply by the inverse, and we'll get this T naught. So in this case, then if you look at, well, G L I plus 1 will lie in some orbit. And what will that orbit be? That orbit should be Gur lambda I. And now you might say to yourself, well, once again, there might be many of these E's, because of course there's many coset representatives of L I. But it doesn't matter. It turns out that no matter which representative we choose, the orbit that this one lies in, G L I plus 1, will be well defined. So no, basically, it doesn't matter which representative of Li we take to make this guy T0. So this is well defined. Okay. So now we have all these structures built up. What do we have? Well, our result. Now, in general, what we're going to use, essentially, is this result of the geometric Sasaki correspondence. And what does it say? It says, well, the category of, let's say, finite dimensional representations of G is equivalent to the category of, let's say, equivariant perverse sheaves on the affine Grassmannian. But, okay, so this is kind of nice, but what do we really care about? Remember that we're thinking about invariant vectors, so we really want are thinking on this side, on the rev side, about Hom, some Hom states. So on this side, we're only really thinking about some Homs between perverse sheaves, and not the perverse sheaves themselves. The G of O action on the left. Yes. So we're interested in not the sheaves themselves, but their Hom spaces. And so what we have is we have this nice corollary. This is due to, Ginsburg. And the corollary is this. If lambda and mu are, let's say, what we'll call them minuscule sequences, are minuscule and contained in, well, this, so the minuscule dominant, the sequence is a minuscule dominant weight, then the result of Ginsburg essentially tells us that the Hom space between V lambda and V mu is isomorphic to some topomology, and this is, we'll call this, this would be Brill-Moore homology rather than normal homology, of, well, some nice space, we'll call it the Grassmannian, the Fischer product. And we're going to take some fiber product, and this fiber product will be over the last factor, and we'll just say what these maps are, how this fiber is over the Grassmannian, tensor, ger, mu. So here the fiber with let's say, ger lambda, so we need to define a map, right, to say how this this fiber, so we're going to say that we're going to call this, let's say, M lambda, which goes from ger lambda to ger by projection on the last factor. So this is often called the multiplication morphism or the convolution morphism in when it's defined on the last. Okay. So this is pretty nice. This tells us that essentially what we have is we can to think about our space and invariant vectors as maybe some sort of top dimensional homology of some, well, some variety. So let's restrict the case where we're considering. So in the case that we're considering, what we have is remember we're looking at Hom C to, let's say, V lambda. So what should this be equal to? Well, C here, we're taking the empty sequence, right, of weights to get the true representation. So this should be equal to the top dimensional homology of, well, essentially, what will be M inverse lambda of the guy T0. So this is the expression that we get on the left if, let's say, one of the sequences is just can't be sequence. So then we just have one, the first product, if we go back to the definition, we can see here that, well, with the empty sequence, we just have L0 in our space, and L0 is defined to be T0. So we only have one element in that case. So this is the definition. And so, of course, here we have this Brill-Moore homology as well. So how is this convenient? I mean, so this is a variety. Why is this nice? Well, it turns out that in the case that lambda are minuscule, which is the case we're in, right, that this variety is pure dimensional. And the Brill-Moore homology has this great property that it's essentially generated by the top dimensional homology, is essentially generated by the irreducible components. The top dimensional irreducible components of the variety are taking it up. So we're going to let, just so I don't have to write M inverse lambda all the time, we're going to write F lambda is equal to M inverse lambda as a definition. So M inverse lambda of T naught. Okay, then by this isomorphism, the irreducible components of F lambda generate or are a basis. So this tells us that essentially we have a very nice geometric basis for the invariant space coming from the irreducible components of F lambda. Okay. So our goal then is to, well, we have this geometric, this sort of geometric thing, this F lambda, and we have our web vector, and yes, one second, we're going to want to somehow interpret our web in a way which lets us expand the web, this psi of the web, in terms of the basis given by this, the irreducible components of this variety. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, where? The cross ger. So we're using projection as the last factor to fiber the product together. So this is just GR here. a small Grassmannian, right? Well, I apologize. Thank you. I'm so used to writing Gr lambda with the subscript that, yes, thank you very much. In our paper, we have Gr lambda in the brackets for such a product. That makes, and I tried to say this is reduced confusion, but it actually increased confusion. So that's not very good. So let's see if I can change that there. I think that's good. Okay. So now that's fixed, that's good. Okay. Yes. So what we'd like to do is be able to describe these irreducible components. So this is very classical. In the case that G equals SLN, this, you can think of F lambda as actually some sort of Springer fiber. You can think of these L elements as some sort of flags or some partial flags which are fixed by some certain nilpotent element. So this is very nice. This is a very classical realization. And we know the components in that case work out. We know the components of a Springer fiber are, let's say, enumerated by these, so let's say, semi-standard or standard Young tableau in the case of Springer fibers, I guess. So what we're going to see here is we're going to see an equivalent definition to that sort of to that Springer fiber definition, but for a general group. So we want to see what these components are. So how will we label them? Well, it turns out that what we need to do is we need to define yet another new thing. So let's see. Let's say once again L be a dominant sequence which is minuscule, and we're going to then say that a new sequence mu, which is also dominant, is a minuscule. Let's see if I can spell this right. It's a Lilleben path of type lambda if mu of zero. So we're going to think of this mu as some sort of zero-based sequence. This guy will be our origin. Will be zero, the zero weight. And we're going to require that mu I plus one, or mu I minus one, is equal to, or is contained in the orbit of lambda I. So what are we saying here? We're basically saying that we're given a certain minuscule weights. We start off at the origin, and we trace a path in the dominant chamber that, at each step, moves by, something in the orbit of this minuscule guy. So each step is moving, let's say, by something in the orbit of a minuscule weight. And what we require then at the end, we'll also require that the last guy is also zero. So we're going to come out, we're going to take this path that goes out, and then we return back to the origin, all by minuscule weights. So why do we do this? Well, we want to discuss the components of F lambda. And so it's natural to think of, the sequences in this F lambda are just the sequences of these elements in the Athanagrassmannian. And, we can ask, what orbits does each element in the sequence lie in? So if you have an element of this F lambda, the element lies in a sequence of orbits. Each sort of thing in the sequence lies in a specific orbit. And those orbits are exactly, sequences of orbits are exactly classified by these minuscule Lilleben paths. So this gives us, essentially, a way of, this gives us a way of, describing the components of F lambda. Okay. So we're going to say here, let A lambda mu be, those things, those sequences in F of lambda, such that the ith element of the sequence is in the orbit given by the ith element of this path, mu. So what we're doing is we're dividing up, we're putting every sequence, every element of F lambda into one of these guys. And it'll turn out that there's a theorem then. We haven't seen this theorem in print, but we believe it's something which is fairly well known or understood, that essentially these components, closure component, is an irreducible component. Component of F lambda, and this is the entire set of components. And there's no duplication. This is like an injection. For each minuscule path, we get one component, and no two paths give us the same component. And this is by injection. Okay. So this means that we've now classified all the components. So we're going to call this, so these guys then, the components of F lambda, then give us a basis for the invariant states. And so we'll call this is called the basis, the resulting basis is called the Satake basis. But it's also, I believe, it's known that this is the same thing as the Mirkovic-Vilonen basis, so that this is not something which is new in that sense. So the question is now, well, we've done all this geometry, we've introduced these webs, the combinatorial logic, we've done this sort of introduction to this geometry, and so how do we relate the two? So, given a web W, I want to consider what we'll call DW, it's dual. And so what we're going to do is we're going to say that, well, this web is oriented, right? And, well, we can also then establish an orientation and a labeling on this sort of dual of the web. So let's go back to this example which we started off with of this SO4 web. We had this web which looked like this. And we had this marked point down here, and what we oriented all the edges going inwards, and here we did this, and then what did we do? We labeled this guy omega 3, omega 1, omega 3, omega 1 around clockwise on the outside, and then we had omega 1, omega 1, and then omega 2, omega 2. So what's the dual of this? Well, of course, we just say the dual graph. The dual graph looks like this. And, well, what can we do? How can we determine an orientation on the dual graph from this? Well, we just pick a rule, because there's two choices to sort of to do this so that this works. So what we'll do is we'll say, if we orient this edge this way, and then if you think of it, it crosses the corresponding edge in the original graph from this side to that side of the face, and the edge goes from the left to the right. So we have two choices, either the edge goes from the right to the left or left to the right, depending on which way we cross it. So we're going to choose at this, we orient this edge so that the edge in the dual goes from the left to the right. So what ends up happening is these edges get oriented in this direction. And then, okay, we want to orient this edge here, so this edge is passing from the left to the right. So if you orient it upwards, it would be passing from the right to the left, so you should orient it downwards. And this guy, well, we should orient this guy, I think, this way as well. So we orient it upwards because then we pass from the left to the right, and then this guy will be like this, and that guy will be like that. That sounds right. And then we can just give labeling. Labeling will just be the same labeling we already have for the edges, because of course for each edge in the original graph, there's an edge in the dual. And well, we also have that marked point in the boundary, which gives us essentially a marked vertex in this dual graph. Okay, so from this object that we'll construct a nice variety, and what we're going to say that Q of D of W is going to be equal to, well, the set of maps from the vertex set of G of W to the Grassmannian with the property that, well, F of this distinguished vertex should be sent to T0, and if V1 is connected to V2 via edge lambda in this direction, then D of F V1 F V2 should be lambda. So what are we saying? We're saying, well, on the Grassmannian, we have this notion of distance. It's not the sort of standard notion of distance, but the notion of distance nevertheless. And what we're requiring is essentially that we're looking to be essentially requiring that the F is essentially what we might call a local isometry from this dual graph to the Grassmannian. So we're requiring that we pick up, essentially what we're requiring is for each vertex, we pick a point of the F and Grassmannian, and the distance from this point to that point will be given by the weight on the edge. Okay. So this structure is basically what we need. This is sort of the geometric interpretation of the web. And so what we need to do now is we need to see how this is related, well, to the original sort of psi w, this web vector, which we started off with a while ago. So if we look at this, it turns out that if we take these vertices on the outside, call these the boundary vertices, we'll define this map called the boundary map on cube dw. So if v0, which is the given vertex, and v1 up to vn, which is also the distinguished vertex, is the, let's say, clockwise sequence of boundary vertices in the W, then we define, well, this map pi from our QDW to, well, it turns out, F of lambda, where lambda is the boundary of the web. So here, lambda is the boundary of W. And what will it do? This map will send a function F to be, well, the sequence of elements F V0, F V1, see that then the conditions that were required here, that every edge, every pair of vertices that are connected by an edge gives this formula on the distance, is exactly the same formula which we used for this F lambda. So this only lies in F lambda. This means that what we can do is we can think of, well, how this map acts on the homology of this variety QDW. So this is the main result, or the first of the say two sort of results in this paper. This is a theorem. Now, I guess that since it's the three of us, it should be, I guess, FKK, I don't know. What the theorem says is, well, there exists class CW in, well, not necessarily the top dimensional homology, but a specific dimensional homology of this QDW. And we're going to say here, let's see, 1, 2, another bracket, where we're going to say this D lambda is, well, it's this pairing of lambda, the sum of lambda with rho, this typically this 1/2 the sum of the positive roots. So this will give us essentially the dimension of F lambda. So this is the dimension of F lambda, right? So this pi should basically go from this, and what we'll say is that we'll say pi star of CW, which lies right in, it'll lie in, well, H top then, because right here here this D is this, which is the dimension of F lambda. So more of F lambda. And it's actually equal to Psi W. Well, here. I'm supposed to go up here, sorry. Thank you. So, what this tells us is then that from the graph, we can construct this nice variety, and from the variety, we can pick out a specific class homology which maps onto the invariant space, and in fact, agrees with our original vector. So then by examining this map pi, and let's say this variety QDW, we can hope to understand, let's say, how this vector psi W expands in this basis F lambda. Let me just check the time. Okay, I still have some minutes left. That's good. So, and it turns out in general that in fact we have a very nice thing that it turns out that if, let's say, the dimension of QDW is equal to this d lambda, and Q of dW is, let's say, reduced. This means it's assuming as a scheme, right? Then, well, CW is just equal to the class of QDW. So this means that in many situations, we actually have a very nice, we can figure out what this guy is, and then since we know exactly how this pi map acts, we can then discover a lot about the subvector. So, yes. Yes, it's a variety, and you can. Well, okay. How do we form? I guess it comes with the fact that of how we form this class. How you can form QDW. It comes up as some sort of intersection, some homological intersection, and then that can be non-reduced. So then that's the sort of problem. Okay. So this is the sort of first result, and I don't know if I have time to specialize SL3, but maybe I can say a few words about it. So since we have a big knowledge of SL3, from let's say Greg's work in the early 90s, we already know what the basis webs are, and so what we can do is we can hope to let's say establish some sort of relation between the basis webs and these components. Well, these whatever are there, lost them already. These sort of the Satake basis. It turns out that in SL3, these basis, what we call the basis webs, these ones where there's no faces of degree, the 0, 2, or 4, are in bijection with, well, in a very nice combinatorial manner with the minuscule little n paths. The idea here is that if you look at this dual graph, it turns out that we can define a notion of distance from any vertex to any other vertex by taking the sum of the weights along every path and looking at the minimal sum. But the reason why we should be cautious when we do that is because we're looking at weights, and not all weights are comparable. So the definition of minimum doesn't necessarily make sense. But with the basis webs, it does. So we can define, in the basis webs, it turns out that they're just the graphs which are nicely done, so that we can define the notion of distance on this dual graph. And we can use that to define, well, the minimal, this minuscule path just from the web. But the result is that, well, if we do this, we have another theorem which says that. So then let's say we let's say have some basis webs, which we'll call W lambda mu, in the same way we have the basis A lambda mu there, from the Stokke basis. And the theorem here is that for SL3, we have that the change of basis from this W lambda mu, whatever these graphs are, I haven't fully described them, but they are something which you can quite easily define to the Stokke basis is we'll call it its upper unitriangular with respect to an ordering on the minuscule paths. The ordering will be that if nu and mu are two minuscule paths, we'll say that nu is less than or equal to mu if, well, they're less than or equal to at each index. So mu I is less than or equal to mu I. So this is quite a restrictive ordering, right? Because some of these may not even be comparable. But this is the ordering on the minuscule paths, and then the change of basis from the W to the Stokke basis is upper unit triangular with respect to these. So basically, each web then decomposes into the corresponding the guy in the component with the corresponding lambda and mu plus some sort of lower order terms relative to that ordering. And this is proved exactly using the fact that we can determine this class, and we can examine what this class looks like. So the hope then is to be able to extend this SL4, and SLN in general. There's some conjecture bases for SLN and SL4 basis for the kernel of the polymorphism, which is unknown if it's really the kernel or not. So the hope is maybe to get a basis of SLN and prove the basis using a similar theorem to this, and then come up with the fact that these proposed kernel relations are actually the relations for the kernel of psi. And there's a wide variety of other generalizations. They can look at these webs, let's say, on other surfaces, like sort of that of higher genus, other than the disk. There's different sort of avenues to explore in this work. So I think, one last thing, I guess, that of course this will be interesting if, of course, this change of basis is actually the identity, because then of course it'll be the same thing as something which already exists, or maybe it is interesting because it's the same. But definitely, in the paper we produce a web where the web actually decomposes non-trivially in terms of this Stokke basis. And interestingly enough, it's the exact same web where this web vector decomposes non-trivially with respect to the dual canonical basis as well. And it's a different decomposition, so all three bases disagree at that location. So we thought that was kind of nifty. So I guess that's it. Thank you very much.